Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to what if you commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.
I'm Ryan Lambert from Elite Prospects.
I'm Sean McIndoe from The Athletic.
And you might notice it's Monday. It's not Wednesday. That's because, you know, travel and scheduling and stuff like that around the draft. We wanted to have an episode this week. There's a lot of news and things of this nature. But it wasn't going to work on Wednesday. So here we are on Monday instead. And
it's also the 4th of July. So, like, if you're at a family gathering or something right now and you just saw this pop up, go home. You have to leave. And go listen to your favorite podcast.
You can at least go try to hide in the bathroom for like an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm. That
and
works.
I wait do that for the mailbag to come out. But yeah, so it's funny because, you know, normally when we do a quick turnaround, you're like, oh, I hope there's like enough news to make everything happen. And then every team in the league hired a coach. 15 trades happened, bunch of contract signings, etc. So let's just get right into it. The thing that I want to talk about the most, though, is everything that's going on in San Jose. They fired their coach on Friday morning. Everybody else is like, we're not going to hire anybody. We're done. Mm. And they're like, now's our chance.
Now's our time to jump.
Yeah. What were your thoughts on this?
Well, it's clearly very weird that they would... First of all, that any team would make changes like this late. They fired Bob Bugner and his assistants.
Yeah, the entire staff, yeah.
Which is, you know, that matters as well, because if it was just one guy, you might think, oh, maybe something happened, maybe they found out something. But no, it's the entire group. I don't think San Jose at the beginning of the offseason would have been a crazy team to put on your list of teams that might make a coaching change. Like,
absolutely not. No.
And Bob Bugner has been an NHL coach for 5 years and has never made the playoffs. So
the track record is insanely bad. I looked this up yesterday. Since he took over the Sharks, they are 25th in all situations expected goals and 30th in expected goals percentage and 30th in goals percentage.
Yeah.
That's really bad.
They're quite bad. And look, I mean, the Sharks are a bad team on paper. Yeah. I don't think anyone ever looked at that team and went, oh, they're underperforming. But, I mean, he also was not great for 2 years in Florida. And
correct.
Then Florida became a powerhouse shortly after. So, I don't think he's a bad coach. I think some of this perception out there that, oh, he would have got a job for sure if they had done this earlier. Who knows? This has been a weird year. This has been
a
year.
Well, hey, they got a bunch of AHL teams.
Yeah.
So.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's true too, and assistance and all of that. So it's a rough one. The thing that makes this especially strange is they don't have a GM. They still haven't hired a GM. So who's making this call, and why now? Like typically, you expect a GM to come in and the GM gets to make that decision, and yet they've done it before they hired a GM.
My theory is that the two or three remaining candidates, depending on who you believe, Mike Greer, Ray Whitney, and I almost said Ryan Whitney. He's got his own job. And maybe Scott Mellenby, depending on who you believe, are the three finalists. And my suspicion on that is that all two or three of those guys were like, oh, yeah, I'd fire the coach immediately.
Yep. That's
so
exactly.
They were like, oh, okay, great.
That's exactly my thought too. That they, you know, when you're interviewing a bunch of people and you sit down, you go, you know, what would you do with our team? And sometimes it might not even be someone you're seriously thinking of as a candidate, but you're just trying to get as many. It's free consulting a little bit too.
Correct.
And if everybody's like, yeah, I'd do a coaching change, then maybe you figure, all right, we might as well bite the bullet and get it done. But it does look. It does look weird, especially if they bring in a GM soon, there could be a perception out there that the new GM like just didn't want to get his hands dirty with firing a coach and had them do it for him, and that kind of makes you look weak to start with. So I don't know. It's a strange situation. I don't think it's a, you know, a terrible decision.
No, agreed.
But the timing and the circumstances, everything are very weird.
Well, I guess my thing with it is that I just can't believe they named an interim GM in like early April.
Yes.
It's 3 months later. They don't have a GM and they just fired their coach. Well, what are they doing over there?
And not only that, but I mean, remember, Doug Wilson left the job because of health concerns during the season.
Yes.
So, I mean, they have, and we don't know exactly what his situation is, but presumably they, you know, they weren't caught off guard by this. They had to know that it was a possibility that he wasn't coming back. So there just doesn't seem to be a plan, which suggests that often when it looks like there's no plan, it's because there are too many plans and competing plans and you know, struggles going on. But by all accounts, they, and maybe this is part of the issue, they still feel like they're going to contend for a playoff spot. And
yeah,
again, like we've said a million times with these guys, they're so locked into so many bad contracts that it's either going to be a real tough job for a GM. And that's the other thing. Like, you know, you talk about, well, you want a GM in place by the draft. Well, I mean, by now, every team's got its list already. Like, there's no, I don't see a GM coming in and radically changing your draft plans.
We got to take Logan Cooley first overall. Oh, really?
Yeah, exactly. But this is the busiest trade week in theory. And I mean, if you're ever going to trade a Brent Burns or an Erik Karlsson or, you know, somebody like that, this is the week to do it, because everyone's going to be, you know, after this, everyone's going to, in theory, have made their moves. And then within a few days after that, it's free agency and everyone's spent all their money. So, I mean, you got to get somebody in soon, you would think, but I don't know.
Yeah,
probably an hour after we finished recording this.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is I think the evidence seems to point to it's going to happen within the next day or two. But again, like, how did it not happen yet?
Mm-hmm.
I just, that's what I don't
even
understand.
Then, like, is it enough to, does that give whoever it is enough time to come in and actually, because we know the deal, right? We know the song and dance. A new GM comes in, especially when it's a brand new GM, which it sounds like it will be here. And it's always like, oh, I got to get the lay of the land. I got to figure things out. Talk to me in 2 months. Well, right, 2 months from now, you're not going to be able to do anything. And maybe that's, you know, maybe that's good for the GM because it buys time, but it's not good for the team.
No. And yeah, I think it was Frank Saravelli used the term delusional to describe Hasso Plattner in terms of, oh yeah, no, we think we're good. We're going to be good right out of the chute here. It's not going to be a problem. Like, and you know, maybe Mike Greer or Ray Whitney or any of these guys, maybe they're going, no, yeah, of course we can be competitive. I mean, I think you and I don't think that's true, but
I mean,
if you're trying to get a job and you're just telling the owner what he wants to hear.
And even just, I mean, just selection bias, right? Like, if he talked to 10 different GMs and 7 of them were like, no, you need to burn this to the ground. And 3 of them were like, maybe. And those are your 3 finalists because it's what the owner wants to hear. But again, like, you look at this cap friendly page,
it's like, grisly. What can you do?
And so there is an argument that says, like, are they good enough to contend? No, probably not. But if you can't tear it down and rebuild, and I mean, I'm not sure, everyone on this team is either signed super long term or somebody that you wouldn't get anything of significance for, or in a lot of cases, both of those things. So maybe you just have to go for the playoffs because you don't have any other options.
Yeah, and along those lines, like, you know, everybody's a 930 goalie away from being a playoff team, right? Like, so if the Sharks can get Aiden Hill and James Reimer to be that for 3 months, like, it wouldn't be, like, because they changed the way things are, like, just any goalie can get hot. And if they get the hot goalie, well, suddenly, you know what? We're looking pretty good. Now, not maybe not in the Pacific. That looks like it's going to be a tough division next year,
is
too.
Is it? Yeah. I don't know. I mean, we all agreed the Pacific was the worst division heading into this season, and then Calgary kind of surprised us.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it could still, you know, again, if I'm looking at this with teal-colored glasses, I could look at that division and go, it's probably Vegas 1, and then who knows?
Yes. I guess what you would say is it's really tough to see the Sharks being the team that makes the big jump. Obviously, Vancouver should improve under Boudreaux for a full season. Obviously, I would say Calgary's not going to be as good as they were last year, but they should still be a difficult team to beat most nights. Mm-hmm. And LA, you know, obviously they will talk about it in a bit, but they obviously went out and got Kevin Fiala, and I suspect they're not done trying to improve the NHL roster. So that's another team, and it's like, okay, so how many teams of the – and then obviously Edmonton has two of the five best players in the world. So how many of those teams do we say – and if San Jose plays it exactly right this summer, they are ahead of those guys.
Yeah.
Tough one.
It is tough. It is tough. I mean,
and especially because the other thing is, you know, any coach you're getting now, that's a coach that like 12 other teams was like, no thanks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because like,
look, I mean, there are good coaches out there. I would argue like Claude Julien. Okay, Barry Trotz says he's not going to coach, although who knows?
Right.
You know. Maybe if it's San Jose instead of Winnipeg, who knows? Even Alain Vigneault, like, mm-hmm. I think they're upgrades on Bob Bubner.
Oh, yeah, no kidding. So,
and I say, I mean, look, we don't know what Bob Bubner could do with a really talented team, but this isn't it, so it doesn't really matter. I don't have a logical argument for why the Sharks could be good next year other than the caveat that you slap on all hockey analysis these days, which is, but weird stuff happens every year to a few teams. And maybe they're the weird stuff team next year. But that seems like about the best case scenario.
Yeah. Which, hey, you know what? If you're entering an offseason, no coach, no GM, and you're going, well, maybe we'll be the weird PDO team next year.
Yeah.
Your friends at Puck Soup say good luck to you.
Yes.
Would love to see how that works out. The other thing about that is apparently one of the big qualifications for the Sharks GM position was played for the Sharks at some point.
Gosh.
Yeah.
How strange.
I do kind of think of Mike Greer as a Shark. I mostly think of him as a Buffalo Sabre, but I kind of think of him as a Shark. And then I looked it up, and he was there for, like, 3 years.
Okay.
And then Ray Whitney hasn't been a Shark. He was a Shark for, like, 5 or 6 years, but not since, like, 2002 or something like that. It's been a really long time.
Scott Mellenby ever play for the Sharks?
He did. He for sure did. I can, like, picture it.
Oh.
Maybe, like, early 2000s. Now, I got to look this up now. But, yeah, very briefly, I would say he played for the Sharks. No, I guess he didn't. Yeah, that's why everybody was saying, oh, he's not actually in.
Yep, that's it. Sorry, Scott. It's not going to happen.
That's so strange. I feel like I can picture him doing that, but oh well. Maybe I'm thinking of his stint with the Thrashers at the end of his career.
Or the Panthers. That's any of those 90s expansion teams.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah, so... good luck to the San Jose Sharks. Let's talk about the other coaching hires that got closed this week. And hell, let's talk about the one that got officially closed yesterday. The Jets hired Rick Bowness out of nowhere.
Which, yeah.
That's a, hey, you made a choice.
Are you like me where when Dallas moved on from Rick Bowness and he was like, it's not a retirement, I want to keep coaching, you were sort of like, sure, Rick. Good luck with
that. Yeah, it's not a retirement to you, sure. Yeah, of course.
And then, yeah, here he is jumping the line and getting a job nice and quick, which I was surprised, and maybe this is just a weird cross section that I of the fan base that I saw. I didn't see a lot of pushback from Winnipeg fans on this. And I know I get like it's when it's done, and as a fan, you're going to look on the bright side. And I do think Rick Bowness, I mean, he's a good coach. He certainly brings a ton of experience. I mean, literally more than anyone else ever when it comes to standing behind an NHL bench. But
right,
this is not, you know, if I'm Winnipeg, I want either the best guy I can get or like the young, you know, future guy that I build around. And, you know, they took their big swing with Barry Trotz. You can't argue that management didn't aim for the top, but they didn't get it done. So this is an interesting consolation prize.
Yeah. I want to find the quote from this guy who I used to do a podcast with called Craig Winooski.
Okay.
And he goes, as a fan of surprises and someone who thinks Bonus is a genuinely okay guy, I'm hoping for the best here. I just have no idea how you sell this to your fan base. It's like being told we're getting you a Nintendo Switch and then you get a Game Boy Advance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds about right. I do love that his top shelf compliment is genuinely okay.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Hey, yeah. He seems like he's all right to deal with, I guess.
That phrase appears on my resume in three different sections.
But yeah, like the to that point where you spent months kind of pumping people up to be like, we're getting Barry Trotz. He's from here. He never played here, but he's mm-hmm. from here. Now, Rick Bowness, he did play and coach in Winnipeg, and that's why they hired him, presumably. Yeah. You know, like the thing I was thinking about was, you know, everybody's like, oh, Barry Trotz, free beer for life. You'll never have to pay for an oil change again, whatever. Rick Bowness, they're like, we can get you a 20% off coupon for an appetizer.
Yeah. I feel like there's an alternate universe where the Winnipeg Jets, when they have their opening going into the season, don't go very, very hard after Barry Trotz. And we see like a report from Elliott or Pierre or somebody saying the issue in Winnipeg is they're worried that if they push all their chips in on Barry Trotz and he says no, that they're going to get stuck with like a Rick Bowness level.
Sure.
And people like us go, what a bunch of chickens, man. Like you got to swing big. You got to aim for the gold ring, all that stuff. You got to go for the best guy out there.
Oh, I think my reaction would have been like, yeah, why would Barry Trotz go coach there? He has all these options.
There was that too. But he apparently was very interested and then chose not to coach. This, the other piece of this is you're getting a guy who's a decent coach. People seem to like the guy, you know, and I do wonder if part of this is, look, we could hire Claude Julien or somebody like that and give them a 5-year contract, or we can bring in Rick Bowness, who everybody knows is going to be like a year or two, and maybe Barry Trotz next year is interested, or maybe, like, is this just your placeholder coach?
Yeah.
That you're not going to be in an awkward situation where, you know, you get 95 points next year and then you have to fire Alain Vigneault because Barry Trotz is now taking your phone calls. Whereas when it's Rick Bowness, he could go, hey, Rick was a great transitional coach for us, and we loved it, and now we move on to something else.
I think I read 2 years team option for a third, and I was like, I don't think anybody's going to be picking up that option.
2 years team option is 2 years.
Correct. Yeah, absolutely. And they're in a very similar spot to San Jose where it's like even a better spot than San Jose because – at least you're like, now, if there's a goalie in the league who could go 930 for 4 months.
Yep.
Connor Hellebuck is the guy. It's not James Reimer. It's not Aiden Hill. This is a guy who is really good. And they have some bad contracts. It seems like they're going to at least try to move Blake Wheelers in the next couple of weeks here, which would
be a big deal.
Huge. He's their captain, and he's on a monster contract. But seems like everybody involved is like, yeah, this didn't really work out as hoped. And they're a team that, like, Are they likely to make the playoffs even if they make every smart change? I would say probably not. There's only so much you can do. But they're certainly more likely, both because you go, unlike the Pacific, where you go, oh, there's probably three teams that are legitimate, like put it in ink kind of playoff teams, versus in the Central, where you go, well, it's Colorado, it's St. Louis probably, and then who, you know? Mm-hmm. Maybe Dallas because they have Pete DeBoer. Maybe Nashville because they have Yossi Saros, and they seem pretty intent on rolling it back as much as they possibly can here. They just, quote-unquote, upgraded on defense. We'll see. But, yeah, the Central seems a little bit more wide open than the Pacific to me. Mm-hmm. So there's that as well. The other coaching hires this week, the Boston Bruins went out and hired Jim Montgomery, gave him his second chance that I think everybody kind of knew he was going to get. And as we suspected, the second the Lightning were out of the playoffs, Steve Yzerman was like, we want to get one of those Lightning coaches.
Yep. Which I think when that spot was not filled, as the playoffs dragged on, I think people sort of put two and two together that's what was going to happen. And it was. And, I think for...
Can't argue with results, right?
Yeah, like, I mean, he's certainly... He's not a well-known guy outside of, you know... I don't think... Well, I didn't know a ton about him, but everything I've seen has been good. In a way, it's a little bit of like a... Kind of like the Lane Lambert situation where it was like, because it's somebody new coming into a first job, you're like, oh, it must be like a young up-and-coming guy, and it's...
Yeah, especially with the name Derek, you're like, oh, surely this guy's like 39 years old, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's...
I remember the first time I saw Derek Lalonde, I was like, they had that name back then?
Yeah.
Guy was born in like 1968 or something.
Yeah, he did get to... actually, this is funny. I'm just... I'm looking at our Athletic coverage of Derek Lalonde, and there's a piece from December after he took... Remember John Cooper missed a game or two with COVID?
Yeah, I do.
And so he took over. That was his head coaching experience. And the first quote is a quip from a guy, Red Wings coach Jeff Blashill says, I hope the TV cameras weren't on him a lot. Well, guess what, Jeff? TV cameras are going to be on him a lot more because he's got your job now.
Yeah, that's right. Finding out Derek is like a guy who's like 50 or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's like, I don't know if you know this. It was apparently not uncommon for people in like the middle ages to be named like Chad and Tiffany and stuff like that.
I've heard that. Yeah. Tiffany is the one that you're like, huh.
Well, that can't be right.
Yeah.
Because everybody's all like, Arthurian legend. Everybody has names like Lancelot or whatever. They're like, no. They're all, everybody's named like Bill back in like 1200. Don't worry about it.
Just the scouting report on Derek Lalonde. He's not shy when it comes to ribbing his buddies, and he enjoys pickleball, wiffle ball, and board games. This guy might be 100 years old.
Respect, brother. Those are all cool things.
Those are fun things.
I mean, we're in his peer group, right? Like, that's the thing, is...
You're not wrong, but you didn't need to say that.
I know. That's right. What did you think of the Bruins hiring Jim Montgomery?
I like it. I think I like that he's getting another chance. It's always one of these weird situations because we don't know the exact circumstances around his departure in Dallas. Correct. So, I mean, you don't want to go overboard talking about how wonderful it is that he's back. And then like 5 years later, we find out that, they did something awful to somebody, but
they fired him because he was the BTK killer. You're like, oh, I don't want to have been on the record saying the BTK killer deserved a second chance.
Pulling up the old, hey, what's the podcast where Sean defended the, but from what we know, it sounds like this was a guy who was in a bad place and took the steps to get out of that place, and now has worked his way back and was a good coach. Other things aside. So I'm still, is he an upgrade over Bruce Cassidy?
You got to say he is not.
But is he an upgrade from Bruce Cassidy for this specific Bruins team? Obviously they think so. Because they made a move on and I don't mind.
I think he's an upgrade over most of the candidates we heard about for sure.
Yes. Yeah. So that's a good way of putting it. Yeah.
You know, again, like David Quinn, that's the thing I forgot to say during the Sharks thing is already people are like, if it's Mike Greer, does it necessarily have to be David Quinn? They're both BU guys. They might have even played together at BU. I don't remember exactly how they line up, but that wouldn't surprise me, certainly, that a guy who is the GM just hires a guy who is his friend in college.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, you know.
I really don't know don't get the whole Quinn thing. And I guess this is where I have to defer to you as the college guy. This guy must have been a great college coach.
Well, he got Jack Eichel to go to BU.
There you go. Jack Eichel's an unrestricted free agent, right?
Yeah, I mean, he won the Coach of the Year award in college the year Jack Eichel played at BU. And I think the hardest part of his job was remembering every like 3.5 minutes to go, hey, Jack, you're up, bud.
Yep, go, Jack. I remember Jerry D, the comedian, had a bit where he was like making fun of Pat Burns. This is going back long, but it, like making fun of Pat Burns winning Coach of the Year. And he's like, what was that? Like, we got a power play? Okay, Dougie, get out there.
Yeah, you're up.
Oh, the penalty's on us. We're killing the penalty. Okay, Dougie, get out there. Oh, coincidental minors. All right, it's even certain. Dougie, get out there. Like, that was the coaching job, and it sounds like it's similar to that. Well, the Sharks probably have a whole bunch of Jack Eichel-level players, so.
Yeah, no problem at all. The stat I always think about with Jack Eichel at BU, I believe the stat is when he was on the ice for the BU penalty kill, they finished the year +2.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. The other small piece of coaching news that I think this is actually older than last week, but we did mention it, and it did catch my eye, is Dan Bylsma getting the job as the head coach in the AHL for the Seattle Kraken.
Yep.
Dan Bylsma, I think, is second only to Mike Yao for like his ability to lurk around vulnerable coaches. Like, he was wasn't he the assistant in Detroit for years there?
And he was,
didn't work out, and now I mean he's in, jeez,
yeah, he's just,
I still,
like,
can't believe Dave Haxtell is a head coach in this league with all the movement and like all the guys out there.
Well, it's interesting because I haven't found a single thing on Cap Friendly's like coaching contracts page. He's technically listed as unsigned for next year. And I don't know if that's because it never came out like that he had signed a 1 year or a multi, like, I can't imagine he signs a 1 year, but like, what is multi-year? If he signed, there's just no terms of his contract have ever been publicly reported as far as I can find.
That must be it. They must have given him at least a few years.
But, yeah, you would think.
That was a choice. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. But, as you say, Dan Bylsma lurking in the tall grass, just like waiting for a sick buffalo to get separated from the herd. And he's like, okay.
Yeah. And then him and Mike Yao just dash for it.
That's right. Yeah, that is Mike Yao and, oh, who was the other one? They hired somebody else, too. The Canucks hired Mike Yao is an assistant coach. And who's their AHL coach now? Shit, this just happened.
I did not see it.
Who was it? It was Jeremy Colliton. That's right.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Which is kind of one of those
interesting ones. He had some success in the AHL before. So good luck to him, you know? But yeah, that's you want to talk about whoever the Sharks hire. Jeremy Colliton. Now there's a guy who's in a position where it wasn't going to work out for him. But don't worry. Yep. They're gonna be fine this year. That's why they got to keep Alex DeBrincat. Everybody's mad. That blows my mind. People are like, well, you can't trade Alex DeBrincat. Why not? Like, where's this team going in the next 3 years?
You absolutely can trade him, but you trade him because he is your best trade chip and you're going to get a lot for him. And when people are, we'll talk about the Fiala trade in a minute, but when people are like, yeah, that's probably what you're going to get for DeBrincat, then don't trade him for that. You don't, like, Minnesota right. had to make a trade.
Yes, they
do. You do not.
Right. Yeah. You know what? Let's take a break and then we'll talk about all that stuff.
Sounds good.
The Fiala stuff. Okay, great. Be right back.
Now a word from our sponsor, BetterHelp. Here's a question. How well would you take care of your car if you knew you only had one car to keep for your entire life? That's kind of how our brain works, and we should be looking to treat and invest in the way that we treat our brain the same way. And there's lots of different ways to support a healthy brain, and one of them is therapy, including online therapy. Look, we've all been through it to some degree the last couple years in our own personal ways, and a lot of us are doing what we can to keep ourselves in a healthy place. And I know quite a few people who have turned to therapy, including online therapy, and had a lot of success with that. And that's what BetterHelp is. BetterHelp is online therapy that offers video, phone, even live chat only therapy sessions. So if you don't want to see somebody on camera, you're not ready for that, you don't have to. You can do it all through your screen. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can be matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. And right now, Puck Soup listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/puck. That's betterhelp.com/puck. This week's show is brought to you by Trade Coffee. It is draft week in the NHL. I'm going to be on the road. I got a lot of stuff to do. It's going to be very, very busy. And for me, that means lots and lots of coffee. And if you're going to be drinking lots and lots of coffee, don't just drink the plain old boring stuff that you grab off the shelf at the grocery store. Get something good. Trade Coffee is a company that connects customers to the freshest and best tasting coffee that you've ever made at home by partnering with the country's best craft roasters. These are independent businesses from big cities and small towns. Trade customers are truly impactful to these independent roasters, and they often are their largest source of new growth for them. It's expert tasted coffee. Trade's coffee team actually taste tests thousands of coffees. They keep 400 different kinds live and ready to ship every day. There's no one perfect coffee for everyone, but there is a perfect coffee for you, and Trade's human-powered algorithm will find that. Trade Coffee sends you freshly roasted beans, 60 of the country's best craft roasters, small businesses who pay fair prices to farmers, sustainably source the greatest beans from around the world. Whether your friends call you a coffee snob or whether you just know it when coffee tastes really perfect, Trade's real coffee experts will personally taste test those 450 roasts, and they will figure out exactly what to recommend to you. Because the truth is, what I like and what you like could be totally different, and you may not even know what you like. That's the point behind Trade, to give you a chance to find out. You will like the selection of specific coffees that's different from anyone else, and that's what Trade will send you. So right now, Trade is offering new subscribers a total of $30 off your first order, plus free shipping when you go to drinktrade.com/puck. That's more than 40 cups of coffee for free from a company that has delivered over 5 million bags of fresh coffee. They will get you started. You take their quiz at drinktrade.com/puck, and you let Trade find a coffee that you'll love. That's drinktrade.com/puck for $30 off. And don't forget, if you've got any birthdays or maybe grads, gift-giving opportunities coming up, Trade subscription is also the perfect gift for the coffee lovers in your life.
All right, we're back, and we talked about it on the other side of the break. Kevin Fiala got traded. Mm. So, as Sean said, trade the Wild had to make, and I think it... honestly, I think this was a pretty reasonable return for Kevin Fiala.
I think
mid to late first round pick, like 19 overall, I want to say. And Brock Faber from the University of Minnesota, who I want to say was a second round pick and who's fine. That's my big Brock Faye. Like, he's a perfectly good NHL prospect. He'll probably be, like, at best a second pair guy, would be my guess.
Mm-hmm.
Good player. Nothing bad to say about him.
Good player, high pick. And, again, given that you have to make this move, I think you are okay with the return.
Yeah.
I don't know that you know, this is, if you had a choice, you're probably not doing that, but they didn't have a choice.
This is what happens when you buy out two guys whose combined buyout cap hit is like $14 million or whatever.
Yes, exactly. And we all knew that was going to cause an absolute mess, and it has, and now they are dealing with the mess, and it's not a rebuild, but also you need to... They couldn't really go and trade this guy for immediate help.
Yeah, and if...
Not immediate help that cost anything.
Right, and if he was going to ask for $7.9 million for 8 years, I would also mm-hmm. be like, good luck.
Yep.
You know, like that's... Mm-hmm. They wouldn't be able to afford probably even like $5 or $6 million. I do think their cap problems are overstated. But then again, or like I said that before, but then again, I didn't think Kevin Fiala was going to be like, I need like almost $8 million.
Well, I mean, he had a monster year last year.
No one's saying he didn't, but like $8 million. Like, I like Kevin Fiala, but Jesus, it's a lot of cash. And I think we said it last week. The Kings need wingers, and he's one of them. He can make a difference for them in their top six. But yeah.
And it's a bit, you know, the nice thing for the Kings, the thing with the Kings is they, even if you view it as an overpay, and I'm not sure that I do, but even if you do, they have a lot of assets to pay from. And so, you know, that context of them being a pretty rich team as far as future pipeline, then, you know, and this being not a phenomenally strong draft, I think it's a very reasonable price for them, especially like this is kind of one of those things where as a GM, maybe there's part of you that says, you know, when do I start adding these guys? They got Arvidsson last year. Do you say like, hey, my team made the playoffs. They earned it. They surpassed expectations, and now I've got to hold on my end of the deal, which is bringing some reinforcements for them. I like it for LA.
Yeah, no, like I said, he's a good player. He will absolutely help them. They needed wingers. You know, like they have some pretty good wings, but like, you know, Victor Arvidsson is by far your best winger on paper. That doesn't exactly scream like surefire playoff team. But you add Kevin Fiala, you're like, okay, yeah, I can see that. Maybe you need one more winger. And I guess the argument is, well, they should have gone out and gotten DeBrincat instead. Like, if you had your choice between wingers from the Central Division who are likely to be traded this summer, mm-hmm. you would, of course, take Alex DeBrincat, 40-goal guy Alex DeBrincat, every time, right? But yes.
Mm-hmm.
Chicago, understandably, again, he's a 40-goal guy. Chicago's like, oh, no, it'll, like, cost a lot. Like, a real lot.
Yeah.
And as I say, they paid what I think is a totally reasonable price for Kevin Fiala. I don't think they're going to – they might miss Brock Faber, I guess. But, like, I don't think they're going to miss whoever the 19th pick is in this year's draft, you know? So.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it's – yeah, it makes sense, and it's, I guess the other piece for Minnesota, I would love to know how the market looked for them in terms of whether DeBrincat was screwing things up for them. Like, how many teams that were in the market for an offensive winger are waiting on Chicago? Or maybe it's none. Maybe teams are, you know, do teams believe that Chicago is going to move this guy for a reasonable price? Because they know Minnesota will. So it's sort of like, do you take the sure thing and go and make this deal, or do you wait and hope that DeBrincat shakes free at a price you can handle? And I, you know, good job by Bill Guerin doing the best he could given the impossible circumstances that he himself created.
Right. Well, I mean, he didn't, right? Like
he didn't sign those contracts, but he did.
Sure didn't.
He did make the decision to do buyouts, which, yeah.
Yeah. No, it like I say, I think this makes plenty of sense for both teams. A classic win-win. Don't see many of those. You always feel like somebody got ripped off. Not this one. Mm-hmm. Although I did say people saying that like one team or the other definitively won the trade. And I was like, I you know.
Yeah. And look, I mean, we can never say that when you're talking about
futures,
one team getting future assets and another team getting, you know, a 25-year-old coming off a career year. But at the same time, this is what we do. We kind of have to. Every now and then, you know, I'll say something or write something and people are like, we can't say that yet. And I'm like, dude, I have bad news about what my job is.
My job is,
this will be
I
a very boring
it.
Show. Yeah, it's just us reading headlines of things that we can't really form an opinion on.
Correct. Yeah, that's right. So there was another trade this week. And it was, as I was writing what we learned, and I get to the Lightning section, I'm like, oh, I guess I'll just say, like, oh, it's crazy that they're going to trade Ryan McDonagh. And then the tweet comes out, we traded Ryan McDonagh. And I was like, oh, now I have something to say. Mm-hmm. They trade for Philippe Myers and Grant Mismatch, and Grant Mismatch is like a AHL guy. No, he's an AHL guy. He played for North Dakota. This is a guy I've heard of. You know, he didn't like, I guess this is the
show off.
I was going to say like he didn't play for the Owen Sound Attack or whatever, but I guess, that any guy who's like just a junior guy is like, this guy played for North Dakota. Who's going to believe that, you know? So, fair play. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so it's McDonagh for Philippe Myers, Grant Mismatch. And I kind of can't believe that they made, like, a cash-out deal only. I figured they'd have to take back, like, one bad contract and one fine one.
Yeah. Did not retain any salary.
Right, yeah. That's what I'm saying. I'm a little surprised.
And the interesting thing, well, one of the interesting things is Philippe Myers is, if you've heard the name or you've kind of, you're trying to place it, he's the guy on Nashville that he's in this unique situation where if you buy him out, you get more cap space, not less, like not just what you save on his script, but you get a credit because of the way his contract was structured, which made him, we thought, a pretty valuable trade chip for Nashville. That they could trade this guy to a capped out team, and it was basically like giving free cap space to a team. Now Tampa has said, Julian Breezeblom said that they don't plan to do that with this guy.
Right?
They like him as a player, but you know, in any event, that was a name that, like, you saw his name on trade boards, and you were probably like, I don't even know who that is, and then you see what the circumstances are, and so that is now, you know, Nashville gave up some assets of value here to get a good defenseman, but a guy who's still on the hook for four more years.
Yeah, the problem is the contract. Tampa pulled the chute like at the exact right time during the playoffs. There were a couple of times when they said, I think they said he's the guy who had the mangled finger or whatever, and I was like, and it wasn't his knees, because there were multiple times during the last couple of series where I was like, this guy looks cooked.
Yeah.
He looked really bad.
Still, you know, still a guy playing 22 minutes for, you know, a Stanley Cup contender.
Yeah.
But he is 33 years old, and he has, if I'm not mistaken,
4 years left, I believe.
Four years to go on a contract that pays him $6.75 million, which is not cheap, but it's not outrageous for even a low end first pair, good second pair guy. Yeah, I mean, I see what Nashville is doing, I guess, in that they are, simplistically, they are adding a good player. They are getting by far the best player in the trade. And if he's a guy who fits in there, you know, Nashville isn't a capped out team. So they probably view it as, we have cap space. We, you know, we hear the term about weaponizing cap space. This is us doing it. We're going to get a guy for not very much, certainly cheaper than he would cost in a normal trade situation if there wasn't a salary cap. So let's take advantage of that and get this guy in our lineup. But for Tampa, like, I love this deal in the sense that it just, this is what makes teams like Tampa the smart teams.
100%. Because
they know, you know, there's just like no emotion. There's no, you know, there's no sentimentality. There's very little loyalty to, you know, anyone who isn't your absolute core.
And even that loyalty is contractually obligated.
Yes.
One or two of those guys, if given the chance, yeah. Two or three.
It's the Bill Belichick,
mm-hmm.
way of thinking, right? Like, I mean, and this is what you really kind of need to do. And they saw a guy, they could see the decline either having started or at least on the near horizon. They looked at this and said, 4 years, like, we could keep him next year, but what's it going to look like a year from now if he has, you know, if he started to decline? Now we're stuck with an anchor. As far as trade assets. So they make the move now. Like, be one step early instead of two steps late. And that's what the smart teams do. And there's Tampa's one of the smart teams, very clearly.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the play to keep Phil Myers is interesting because, as you said, they could have saved a ton of money. What's his contract? 2.55 is his contract. They could have saved another like $600,000 if they bought him out, because, as you say, his contract was structured in such a way that he would have then only cost them like $600,000 next year. So it would have been like a very advantageous thing to buy him out if they didn't think he was like potentially a guy who could help and make a difference and all that.
Yeah. They say that, which
they say
makes
that,
me
right.
wonder if they wouldn't consider flipping him. You know, you go out and say, oh, we really like this guy. He's a good player. And then you wait for the phone to ring and
right.
like Toronto or somebody, some capped out team says, could we have him so that we could buy him out? And then you go, oh, gosh, I don't know. We really like him as a player.
But, yeah.
I mean, how what a smart Tampa thing that would be, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you take someone else's asset of value that they could flip and you flip it instead.
Yeah, and then you also don't have to pay for that buyout. It's just saving like actual cash in addition to everything else. But
yes.
The crucial thing about Phil Myers too is if they do actually like him and they can get him to figure out his problems, one, he's 25. Two, he's a pending RFA after next season. So that's a guy where they could give him a Nick Paul deal. That's another thing they did this week, where they go, we'll give you not a lot of money per year, but we'll give you like 4, 5, 6, 7 years. And for a guy like Phil Myers, you're like, oh, damn, that sounds great. And I live in Florida, and I play for a team that's perennially quite good. Mm-hmm. Sign me up, you know? But what's interesting with all this is now they are down to only negative $900,000 in cap space. And so as soon as they put Brent Seabrook on LTIR at the start of next season, they're all set cap-wise, and they have mm-hmm. about $5.9 million to spend. Now, what would I say is a fair contract for Andre Palat at his age coming off that postseason? Maybe right around that amount of money.
Yep. So. Mm-hmm. It certainly does kind of feel like that. That is what they did here, is they chose Palat over McDonough. But
and I think that's a good call.
I probably
choice.
Wouldn't have said that a year ago, but he's a good piece of that team.
Yep.
So
the other thing we should say is the rumor is they're also trying to get Alex Killorn the hell out of town, which again makes perfect mm-hmm. sense. $4.45 million against the cap only for this year remaining. He has a modified no trade. I don't know what the 16 team no trade list here it says. So they can trade him to half the league, a little less than half the league, I guess. And he has no say, but also they might go, why don't you work with us here? And you got your two Stanley Cups. You made a bunch of money.
Yeah. And, you know, Ryan McDonough just left. you know, happily and or seemingly
not
and,
not happily. I
what
think,
are you not happy?
I think the quote was like
smoothly,
tough to swallow or whatever. But yeah,
yeah. So you know, yeah. They're smart, man. They're a smart team, and sometimes being smart doesn't mean always being the nice guys. We've certainly seen some teams that have tried to do that as their strategy. Let's keep everyone happy. Let's give everyone what they want, and everyone will be so happy they'll reward us.
Yeah.
And Tampa is doing more of the Belichick thing, and yet they win, and it's weird. The winning seems to trump everything else as far as making players happy.
Right. And the other thing about that is, you know, how many times have we seen a team win a Stanley Cup or even get deep into the playoffs and go, well, we have to give all our third liners $4 million. We'd be crazy not to. These guys just went to a Stanley Cup final or whatever. Mm-hmm. The Lightning are like, it feels like we can just go to the Stanley Cup final all the time. So we don't really need to feel like Alex Killorn is the guy who's getting us there. This is again, mm-hmm. as you say, this is what smart teams do. Let's move on and talk about the other big transaction this week was Brock Besser's extension in Vancouver.
Yeah.
A little surprising that he took like a modest raise at best. Felt like this was going to be his chance to kind of cash in a little bit, but he didn't do it.
Right. And but, you know, coming off of not a great season. So
correct. Yeah.
And, you know, this is a guy where I'm always a little surprised when I look at his numbers because, you know, he hasn't played. He's never played like a real, like a full season.
Right.
Obviously, the last couple of years, part of that was because the seasons themselves weren't full seasons, but never hit 30 goals, never hit 60 points. Like, he's a guy that to me, it almost feels like when I look at his page, I expect to see that like 3 years ago.
He had like a 32-goal season. Yeah.
And, you know, he's close. He had 29 goals as a rookie, like that kind of
stuff. In 62 games.
He was the runner-up for Rookie of the Year. But, I think it makes sense for both sides, even as there is risk for both sides, because he's not getting paid like an elite guy, but he is certainly getting paid as a productive guy. And, you know, the concern with if you're Brock Besser is you've left money on the table, that if you have the big breakout, you're tied to this team for three more years under under middle six money. And if you feel like you can be more than that, then you may have taken a discount. And if you're Vancouver, it's sort of a double-sided risk, is that if he regresses, which I don't think he will, it would be surprising at his age, but if he does, you're overpaying. And if he doesn't, and if he does blow up, you lose him in 3 years, very likely, because you have no team control beyond that.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, to me, it's okay for teams and players to acknowledge that, hey, there's unknowns here, there's some question marks, let's come to a place where we're sort of sharing the risk, and then we see what happens.
Yeah, and the other thing is, this is a 3-year contract. That's right around the time they think the cap will have started rising as normal again for a year mm-hmm. or two. So if it works out for Brock Besser, then he's about to get insanely rich when he's like 28.
Yeah, which is probably something that more players should be doing right now rather than locking in for 8 years right now. But much easier said than done when it's not your career on the line.
Yeah, the flat cap really does make everything interesting. I think Brisebois had a quote that was like, if it wasn't for the flat cap, we'd be keeping Ryan McDonagh for sure. However, there's a flat cap, and so we didn't really have a choice. Which, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know? They also signed Jack Rathbone. So to a one-way deal, so it seems like he's just going to be on the team next year. And that's a guy that they kind of like, I think. They think he's going to be a good defenseman. I guess the issue is that he's also a left-handed defenseman, and so they have to figure out how that's going to work because Their problem is that their right side is what is bad. If you go down their left side, it's Quinn Hughes, Oliver Ekman Larson in a second pair role, and Travis Dermott, I think, is a lefty as well. And then on the right side, it's like, oh, here's Tyler Myers, here's Luke Shen. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Tucker Pool. Oh, the Tucker Poolman contract. God, I forgot about that. Oh, my God. Well, maybe they can get him to play his offside, huh?
Maybe.
Yeah, and then the one last... What?
Without affecting his playing ability too much.
Can he be worse than Tucker Poolman?
There you go.
And then the one last piece of UFA news here is that Pierre LeBrun tweeted this just before we started the show. It seems like there's still no timetable for the Evander Kane grievance, and it's almost certainly not going to get done before the 13th, which is when free agency starts.
Hmm.
Ouch.
Yeah, because there has been talk, and I don't know if it was ever resolved, that does the grievance affect his ability to sign elsewhere? Does it?
I believe he can sign, but then he could still be told, no, you're San Jose Sharks property.
Right, in which case he goes back, which again, that all, it's such a mess. You know, the Sharks also, I'm sure, before free agency want to know this. Like, this is all leading towards some sort of settlement where the two sides just figure it out on their own.
You would think.
Rather than wait for an arbitrator.
But,
because, yeah, I mean, imagine being Evander Kane, shopping yourself around and going, but just so you know, there is a small but non-zero chance that my contract I signed with you could be voided in a couple weeks, at which point there will be no free agents left for you.
Yeah. And then at that point too, like if the arbitrator says he is Sharks property, turns out the Edmonton Oilers never made the Western Conference Final. They had a player that was ineligible to play for them.
That's right. Yep. They never made the playoffs. Sorry.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Connor McDavid.
Yep. A crazy situation. I cannot believe the league is letting this happen. But wasn't it reported that it was like, it's because the arbitrator was just like on vacation for all of June or something like that?
Ah, okay. Well, then what can you do? What could a billion-dollar league like the NHL do in that situation?
He just turned over the sign. The arbitrator is out.
Yeah.
Gone fishing. I can't believe that's a thing, that's going to happen. I guess I can, because as you say, it is the NHL. But yeah, a wild situation. But there's one more wild situation with the Edmonton Oilers that is currently playing out, and we'll talk about that after the break. This week's episode of Puck Soup is brought to you by Raycon. And I got to tell you, folks, lately I've been listening to a lot of like The Grateful Dead and Dead and Company, this kind of thing. Never thought I'd be in this position in my life, but here we are. One of the things I became obsessed with during the pandemic. These are great shows. They're all just like widely available for you to download, stream, whatever. And it's been great. And part of the reason it's been great, my Raycon wireless earbuds. They look, feel, and sound better than ever. They have optimized gel tips with perfect in-ear fit. So that they're comfortable and they will not move. You can be running, walking the dog, mowing the lawn, whatever you want to do in your Raycons. They're not falling out. I use them all the time. They're really good. They give you 8 hours of playtime and a 32-hour battery life. And then when you need to charge them, you just pop them in the little charging port thing. I don't know what that's called. Somebody probably does. But I'm not one of them. And yeah, they charge up super fast and they're great. So here's what you're going to want to do. Check out Raycon's wireless earbuds. And my guess is that you're going to leave a 5-star review. They have 49,000 5-star reviews. You'll probably want to leave one too. So go to buyraycon.com/puck today and you'll get 15% off your order at Raycon. That's buyraycon.com/puck for 15% off. buyraycon.com/puck. This week's episode of Puck Soup is brought to you by Brooklinen. Folks, look at the calendar. Go outside for like 2 seconds. Summer is here. It's super hot. But lucky for us, Brooklinen is here to keep you cool and comfortable at home and on the go with their best-selling bedding, loungewear, towels, and more. If you sleep hot in the summer, or hey, even if you sleep hot year-round, right? You can make your entire bed feel like the cool side of the pillow with Brooklinen's classic percale sheets and replace your heavy winter bedding with their lightweight comforters. So head over to Brooklinen today to keep your cool at home and on the go all summer long. Go to brooklinen.com and use promo code PUCK to get 20% off your purchase of $100 or more, plus free shipping. That's brooklinen.com, BROOKLINEN.com, and enter the promo code PUCK for $20 off and free shipping. All right, so we mentioned the Oilers have a little problem, and I want to just read the headline here. This is from Mark Spector on Sportsnet. Once again, Puljujarvi wants out, and Oilers are ready to accommodate with a trade. Yes, Puljujarvi and the Oilers are ready for a divorce. As he was 3 seasons ago, Puljujarvi is ready to move on for a fresh start elsewhere, sources has confirmed. The Oilers are ready to oblige and are speaking with at least 4 teams in an attempt to push the return as high as possible.
Yeah.
This is wild to me. I know he did not have a good playoff. But he's a classic guy.
Or any great seasons yet.
Well, so that's true. But this is a classic guy where, you know, he shot like 8% this year. And didn't play the full season, which is obviously, maybe you say that's an issue. Couldn't play all 82 or whatever. But everything that happened when he was on the ice tended to be in the Oilers' favor. Now, you might say, well, that's because he played a lot with Connor McDavid. But he's one of those guys where all his impacts playing with, without McDavid, whatever, were good. Now, I'm not saying this guy is unbelievable or anything like that, but this seems like a classic situation where the Edmonton Oilers, like many teams before them, have been like, how can we sell as low on a guy that we picked really high one time as possible?
Yes, that, I think that is fair. This is a guy where all the underlying numbers suggest a much better player than the top-level boxcars, which are not great for a guy who was, what, third or fourth overall pick 6 years ago. I mean, he's 23. This isn't, you know, this isn't a 19-year-old where we're still waiting. Just cracked the 30-point mark for the first time.
Yep.
Failed to match his career high in goals, which is 15 in a season. Like, this is, I feel like there's, and Lord knows, Edmonton is always ground zero of 200 hockey men versus the smart analytics people. Yeah. Like, it was that was where that movement felt like it blossomed out of that fan base. And certainly the media there tends to be very old school. And it feels like you've got, like, either this guy is a total bum, a bust, it's, you For know, sure. just a write off of a pick, or he is an elite level player who just happens to never produce any elite level numbers.
Right.
And it's, you know, the chances are it's somewhere in the middle. Like, the chances are he was, you know, he's never going to give you anywhere close to fourth overall pick production. And yet, could he be a much more productive player in a better situation, or even in Edmonton if he was just, you know, if they waited it out a little bit? But they have apparently convinced themselves in Edmonton that it's either him or Kyler Yamamoto, one or, but not both, that they have room for, which I guess is, this is kind of what happens when you give, when you trade for Duncan Keith with no salary retained, when you give Zach Cassian $3 million a year because he looked good with McDavid.
So that's the funny part about this. Puljujarvi, 65 games, 14 goals, 22 points, 36, or 22 assists, 36 points, right? Now I'm going to read you Zach Cassian's box score from the year, or boxcar numbers from the year he cashed in. 59 games, 15 goals, 19 assists, 34 points.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, we got to keep Zach Cassian. This guy's unbelievable. Yep. But and he was what, 29, 30 at the time? Whereas Puljujarvi, as you say, he's no spring chicken, really. You know, you feel like by now he should be better than he is production wise. Mm-hmm. But they're like, we got to get this fucking guy out of town at 23 years old. Zach Cassian puts up more or less the same numbers. And they're like, what are we going to do? Not keep this guy for 4 years?
Yep. Yep.
This team is fucking awesome.
Zach Kassian was the classic, like, this is what would drive me crazy if I'm Connor McDavid, because you took a steep discount on your 8-year deal, even though you became the highest player in the league. You left tens of millions of dollars on the table. More than that, if you consider the option of just signing shorter term deals. But you leave all that money on the table so that they will build a winner around you. And instead they put scrubs on your line. And then when those scrubs have career years, because they're playing with you, they give your money to them instead. And Zach Kassian is an exhibit of that. And, you know, you would think the Oilers would be trying to keep 23-year-old guys. But, you know, at the same time, I'm very interested to see what sort of what the trade looks like here.
Yeah.
Are the Oilers selling low? Are there enough smart teams out there that like this guy that that will bid on him, where, you know, even if Edmonton's not smart, if two smart teams are bidding against each other and Edmonton is just taking the best offer, they can still get a pretty good return on this guy, you would think.
Yeah. So here is I'm going to read from deeper in the article here. Puljujarvi is deemed, quote, a play killer, unquote, inside the Oilers' dressing room, it is believed, where two of the best centermen in the world have not been enough to turn Puljujarvi into a legitimate top six winger in the NHL. The puck dies on his stick in the offensive zone too often to continue to saddle Connor McDavid or Leon Draisaitl with such a winger on a regular basis. So what is Puljujarvi's value? Blah, blah, blah. He asked a bunch of people around the league. Holland would do well to find a second round pick in return for Puljujarvi. Here is a sample of the replies. Probably more like a third for me. Should be able to get a second. Puljujarvi is the equivalent of a third line player with some upside. If you can get a second round pick, take it. Those are the four quotes published by, you would think, like, front office people. So it feels like second or third. If I'm a team with a second or third that is looking to upgrade its middle six and maybe get a little extra something out of it, you know, like if I'm the Boston Bruins, I have a second round pick this year. I have a third round pick this year. Let's make it happen, you know? But yeah, as they say, the play does seem to die on his stick a little bit. And maybe part of that is, again, he only shot 8% this year. And that's maybe not what you would expect from a player of his skill level. But also, how many times have we seen a guy gets out of a bad situation where everybody has decided they hate him for whatever reason, and then he's good somewhere else? He could be Nail Yakupov, right? And I'm not saying it's this is a Taylor Hall situation, but I make that gamble. I gamble that second round pick, which doesn't, you know, it sounds like it has a lot of value. It doesn't really have a lot of value. No. You'd be lucky to get a Jesse Puljujarvi with a second round pick. Let's put it that way. So, like, Carolina is a team. I'm calling Ken Holland. We'll give you a second round pick. We'll give you whatever.
This does feel like a Carolina move.
Yeah, a Ryan Suzuki, where it's like, oh yeah, he's a good player, but he's not like that good, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm really interested to see how this shakes out, because
and then what contract does he get?
Right, because that's the other thing. He's an RFA. I don't know. Feels like you give him $2.5 million or something, he's gonna be like, thanks. Sounds good. You know, we'll see. One last thing, let's do this here. This is gonna be the week of trades. There's going to be a bunch of trades. The draft is on Thursday evening. And it seems like there are more guys in play than usual because of the flat cap. Yes. So I pulled up the Athletics trade board, whatever you want to say.
Good. How do I get that? Can I subscribe?
I don't think so.
Any deals on right now?
There are certainly people who would know better than me about the deals. I'm paying full freight like a fool. Like a fucking idiot. But number one on their list, this was published on June 29th. And number one on their list was Kevin Fiala, who was traded on June 29th.
Nailed it.
Now, this makes me say, did they maybe have Kevin Fiala like 7? And then they very hastily were like, no, number one. Number one, actually.
Nope, we had him number one. He was there for 2 hours, and then he got traded. So.
the athletic curse, some are calling it.
Yes.
Exactly. Number two on this list, JT Miller with the Vancouver Canucks. Seems like this is going to happen for sure.
Certainly, probably should if you're Vancouver, and yeah. Now that they've got Besser locked in at not an outrageous amount, but that
enough
should give them clarity on what to do next.
Yeah. We're starting to see like the Rangers. Oh, remember he used to play for the Rangers? He might go back there. And then it says, I think it was Eric Duhacek wrote this one. And he goes, New Jersey and the Islanders might make sense too. Maybe get out of like the greater New York area. There might be some other teams.
Yep.
But I agree that New Jersey does make a lot of sense. I don't know about the Islanders because, you know, he's not 35 years old and bad, so they probably don't want to sign him.
Yeah, but if they commit to him long-term, he will become that.
Sure.
Sometimes you have to develop the guys into what you want.
Yeah, that's right. But yeah, I think obviously he's a difference maker. He's a really good player. He's a leadership-y kind of a guy. I think this is a guy that a lot of teams can really talk themselves into. If they think they can retain him long term, and that might be a thing where the Canucks let other teams talk to his agent or whatever. But I don't know, good player. If I was a team that wanted that little extra oomph to get into the playoffs or get past the second round or whatever, I'm calling the Canucks about JT Miller. He's good.
You can do that, sure. Yep.
Another guy much like that, Jacob Chychrun. Number three on the list.
Yeah. Who we heard all last year and then didn't get moved. I still feel like that's, I don't know. I feel like this is Arizona keeping a guy's name out there going, if we can get a windfall, of course we'll move him. There's no point keeping him for the next few years given what we're doing, but there's also no pressure at all to move him. He's cheap. He's young. And he didn't have a great year last year as far as the, like, you know, the flashy number. His thing a year ago was he scored 20 goals. So, you know, at that pace. So, boy, don't we love goals? And it kind of wasn't there for him last year.
Right.
But, I mean, I won't be shocked if he's moved, but I will also not be shocked if he is in the top five of this trade board for the next 2 years.
Yeah, for sure.
Goes anywhere.
Yeah, this is another thing where, like, if LA hadn't just traded their first round pick, everybody was like, well, LA makes perfect sense. And St. Louis was briefly connected to the McDonough trade. And so, you know, I don't know. Do they have their first round pick this year? Feels like they probably do, if I'm remembering right. Mm-hmm. And that would make perfect sense. Like you build a pack. Yeah, they do. They have their first round pick the next 3 years. You build a package around that for sure. And, you know, maybe you can get the Coyotes to take Marco Scandella off your hands, whatever, you know? But yeah, I think there are plenty of teams that could use a Jacob Chychrun, obviously, even if we're saying this is not a man who is a guaranteed 20 goal scorer forever. He's cheap. He's signed long-term ish. And he's like 24, 25 years old. And he plays the left side, which everybody likes for defensemen. So, hey, another defenseman who's on the board here. One, this is, did you see, you ever see Cody Rhodes' last promo in AEW?
No.
So he goes out and he's being kind of cryptic, and it's everybody kind of knows he's maybe not signed with AEW. He's on a per appearance deal or whatever. And he just kind of gives a promo like, here's me giving my advice to everybody on the way out the door. And he says about Jay Lethal, I think it was Jay Lethal, one of the strangest things anybody's ever said in a wrestling ring. This man has the best cutter in the business. Avoid, avoid, avoid. And that's me talking about Tyson Barry. This guy, avoid, avoid, avoid. Do not help the Oilers by getting him off the books. This would be an inadvisable sign or trade for anybody. If they call and they say, we'll give you Tyson Barry for a 7th round pick, and you're like, I have the worst power play in the league last year. Maybe. But that's a lot of money for a guy who I wouldn't trust to play at 5-on-5 as far as I could throw him. And he's signed for 2 more years. Yikes.
Yeah. Having gone through the Tyson Berry experience, I don't know that I'd be lining up to jump on this guy. But there won't be a ton of big name defensemen moved, so again, you don't have to. You just need one team to want him or two teams to kind of want him. And I don't know, trade him and then sign Yamamoto and Puljujärvi.
Yeah.
Feels like a good move.
Oh, no. If the Oilers can get a sucker to come along and take this contract off their hands, by all means. But he's like a third pair guy who is only really useful on the power play. And I'm like, who do the Oilers also have that's a defenseman who's really useful on the power? It's like the guy they're paying $9.5 million a year or whatever. Darnell Nurse. So why would you have Tyson Barrie out there if you're the Oilers? Yeah, this is, again, avoid if you're any team that isn't like absolutely desperate for power play help. Another defenseman comes up next on the list here, and that's Jeff Petrie.
I can't imagine how you can trade Jeff Petrie, but like as in find a taker for him.
Yeah, especially because he has a 15-team no trade list, it says here.
Well, he has a contract that should be a 32-team.
100%, yeah.
What is it, 2 years left?
3 years
left. 3 years left.
6.25
mil. He's 34 years old, 6.2. I mean, you couldn't, if you put this guy on waivers, nobody would take him for nothing. So, I mean, if you're trading him, it has to be a case of like, how much are we giving up to get?
Yeah.
If you can get a team to give any value at all for Jeff Petrie, you've done a fantastic job.
Can the Canadians eat money on this? Let's look at their cap friendly page.
They probably could.
Yeah, they don't have any. They don't have anybody like that. Well, not only Shea Weber's gone, but like they don't have any retained salary elsewhere either.
Ah, yeah,
that's what I'm saying. So like they could absolutely eat money on this. It would make sense for them to do it because, like, I think Petrie's still a perfectly good player. But as you say, the contract makes it extremely prohibitive. And if he costs 3.125 million, I'm maybe not super comfortable with the 3 years on that one, but I can at least maybe swallow it. If Montreal's like, we'll eat money and like give you a third round pick. Okay. But yeah, that I don't know.
Yep.
Like I said, he's a perfectly good player, but why would you want that contract on the books? Six, Alex DeBrincat. We talked about him already. Why would Chicago do it? Well, because what's the point in keeping him? As you say, they're under no pressure to keep him, but there's no real point in keeping him. He's going to cost a lot of money in a year, and they're going to be in a situation where they're trying to be bad. So he's counterproductive in that way. I don't know. After that is William Karlsson.
Yeah, that's an interesting one.
Yeah.
He seems to sneak in and out of these lists.
Mm-hmm. And I think understandably so, just because of the contract, not because anybody thinks he's a bad player or anything like that. But the contract's a tough one. $5.9 million. It's a lot for a number three center. On this team, anyway. He's probably a two on most other teams.
Well, that's it, right? I mean, you're trading him as to be a guy, and he's a good player, and it's not a crazy number for what he brings to the table. It's just a question of whether it fits for Vegas. And Vegas, again, is, you know, it hasn't been as successful, but kind of like Tampa, they're one of those ruthless teams. Like, William Karlsson was a huge part of what they built there, and they're willing to move him if they feel like they need to. I can't blame them. That one's interesting, though. Like, I don't, there's a lot of guys on this list I'm like, why would you trade him? And there's a lot of guys where I'm like, why would you want him? But William Karlsson, I think, fits as a guy I can see why they move him, and I can see why somebody out there would pay up.
Yeah. And to that point, I think he would kind of cost a decent chunk of money, right? Because right now we're yeah. Vegas is looking at a cap crunch, but they're like, oh, we pay our backup goalie who's not very good like $2.5 million, and everybody wants mm-hmm. a goalie. So like that would seem to be the guy they would want to trade. But as you say, if you can free up $5.9 million for a third line center, I think that's a fairly easy call, you know. And you're going to yep. get something of value back, right? Like, because he's good. So it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, another defenseman, Sam Girard from the Stanley Cup champion Colorado Avalanche.
Yeah. Definitely a guy I'd be interested in taking a run at. But mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a bit of a cap situation for Colorado. Again, we'll see, and the people who put these lists together know what they're talking about, but to me, a smart team like Colorado doesn't trade Samuel Girard because of the cap. They trade somebody else to make room for Samuel Girard because of the cap.
Yeah.
And they have the cap room to sign him. It's more a case of do they...
Well, he's signed.
Do they... Or, yeah, to keep him, I should say.
Right.
Do they want to keep the UFAs? In which point they need to clear room, but
right, yeah. This is a Kadri / Burakovsky or Girard kind of an argument, and
yep.
You know, if you're the Avalanche, you're like, well, look at our fucking defense, right? Like Makar, unbelievable. Devontae's maybe the best like number two defenseman in the league. Bowen Byram obviously really came into his own in the playoffs, but even like. Down the stretch in the regular season, you were like, oh, this kid like has something here. This kid's a player. Whereas Girard is, you know, if he's your fourth best defenseman, do you want to be paying your fourth best defenseman $5 million?
Yeah, if I've got three awesome defensemen ahead of him. Nice problem to have, but I do get where you're coming from.
Yeah, and Byron, the tricky part is Byron's an RFA next summer. So, and then he gets to go, well, if Girard's getting five, like I should be getting six. And you go, oh, well, that now it's becoming a tricky numbers game. Although I guess Colorado could say, well, Taves is making 4.1. And he's, when we got him, he was like a year away from UFA. So take less.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, obviously Colorado has bigger cap considerations coming up soon. Yeah, next up on the list is Jesse Puljujärvi. We talked about that at length, so no need to go there. Patrick Hornqvist is 10th.
Yeah.
Good luck to the Panthers getting that contract off the books. Good luck to anybody who trades for him.
Yep. I was going to say, it's always interesting when his name comes up because we all get to learn what team it is that he was on. And then we go, oh, right, Florida, sure.
And again, yeah, not a bad player or anything, but I feel like it's just a contract that has not aged well, obviously.
Yeah. Although, I mean, how we do this dance every year, right? We go, ah, you can't trade that contract. And then you never know. It happens sometimes.
Yeah, but, well, he also has a no trade of some kind, eight teams, it says, a modified no trade of eight teams. But he's 35. He makes $5.3 million against the cap, and it might even be more. No, it's dead even. The money, so it's not a back diving contract. That's the gimmick. But so like you got to pay this guy $5.3 million in straight cash over the course of the season.
Straight cash.
It'll be interesting to see if they can move him. Like if you look at that roster. That's 1,000,000% the guy you move. I don't know mm-hmm. how they get it done though.
Yeah,
it's tough.
Any other names in that's the top 10. There's a top 30 where I've got a couple of names that did jump out at me.
Mm-hmm.
Number 16, Sean Monahan.
Yeah.
It really comes down, if you're the Flames, if the Johnny Gaudreau situation, as of Monday morning, still no news there, and Matthew Tkachuk as well. Gaudreau, UFA, Tkachuk, you still have his rights.
And they got to sign Mangiapane as well.
Oh, did they? I didn't even
know. No, they have to, I'm saying.
Oh, they have to. Okay, yes, yeah. So, in theory, you've got to get Monahan out of there, a guy that... It's fascinating, right? I mean, he's got a year left. Him and Gaudreau signed almost matching deals. And
they did. Now,
here at the end of it, one guy you're just trying to flush out for cap space, and the other guy's about to hit probably eight figures on a deal. Interesting to see if they can find someone.
Injuries really piled up for him. He hasn't played more than 70 games. Well, I guess that would have been the full season in 1920, but he just kind of can't seem to stay healthy. And even when he's quote unquote healthy, you know, he scored 30 goals 2 years in a row. 31 as a rookie, that kind of thing. Like he always had holes in his game, but one of the things he could always do was put the puck in the net. Can't really do it anymore. So yeah, if you're the Flames, you're like, get this guy the hell out of my
And everybody knows you're saying that. And
yeah.
I mean, he's the sort of guy that if you're a team that has some cap space next year, and you know, the Flames potentially will attach assets to move him.
In theory.
You could do worse than get a guy like that. And I mean, you have no commitment past a year. And if he works out, you know, he's going to be UFA. There's nothing that says he has signed another $6 million contract, right? I mean, maybe he's willing to sign for significantly less than that if he finds a good fit. Like, it would make sense to me, but I'm definitely holding the Flames' feet to the fire to get as much as they'll attach. So I like that. And then the other ones that to me are interesting are, and Eric's got them pretty much all at the bottom of the list, is the goalies.
Yeah, I did want, before we get to that, Pavel Zacha is the other guy that I'm very interested in, because he's a good player, you know? But it just seems like a thing where the Devils might not be able to sign him for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And, it says here, if the Devils and Canucks eventually do business, Zacha could be the player heading Vancouver's way. Like, if it's Zacha for JT Miller, I think that's a clear upgrade for the Devils, but, like, it doesn't hurt the Canucks that badly either. That's an interesting connection to me that I maybe wouldn't have thought of. Let's get to the goalies. 25 Jonathan Quick, 26 John Gibson, 27 Ilya Samsonov, 28 Mackenzie Blackwood, 29 Semyon Varlamov, 30 James Reimer. It just goes to show what a mess the goalie market is, I guess. I would say maybe none of these guys I particularly want.
Quick. Jonathan Quick is...
coming off a good year. Can't say he's not.
1 year left, coming off a good year. You know, certainly if you're one of those teams that wants playoff experience and all of that, he'd be okay. I don't think he moves, but he could. He absolutely could, especially if the Kings retain, which, you know, they're in still in good, decent cap situation.
Yeah, it depends on what John else Gibson, the Kings want to do this summer, right? Like, if they really want to go like, oh, we do want Philip Forsberg, you got to get Quick out of there.
I feel like what would make sense for the Kings right now is to call a bunch of teams that you know need goalies and say, hey, Jonathan Quick could move. We get that he's probably not your top priority, but call us back in a few days if whatever you're working on doesn't play out. I do not understand John Gibson. At this point, I don't understand why we're still acting like he's a Vezina caliber.
No, for sure.
Goalie. With that contract.
Yeah.
I wouldn't take him for free. And yet I might keep hearing.
If I'm a team that needs a goalie, I might give that a whirl. Say, well, look,
You'd commit 5 years?
Yeah, I'd like...
$6.4 million?
If it's absolutely
to a guy
free,
who's been bad for 3 years?
Yeah, look.
Like, I'm saying you put him on waivers. If you're a team, let's say you have the cap space, but, you know, you don't have unlimited cap space, would you take him?
Maybe. I think there was a time where he was like a 3 or 4 year period where I think he was almost unequivocally the best goalie in the world.
He was very good.
He was really fucking good for 3 or 4 years. And then he hits a wall where he's, as you say, he's been bad the last 3 years. I want to say like a 906 save percentage on average.
Less than that.
Yeah.
904, 903, 904.
Oh, okay. Yeah. 904 then. But
and,
yeah. Bad.
And last year started off well and then just really faded.
I guess maybe I'd want to see the medicals, you know?
Yep. I mean, he's 28. It's not like it's the aging curve here that we're pointing to, which is good news in theory if you're going to go trade for him.
Because, yeah.
I mean, there's nothing, there's no undoing age. But I don't know, man. I would just.
Yeah, there was never a point where they really like ground him into dust. Like, this isn't like a, who was it? Was it Devin Dubnyk? Got like just. Yes, super,
yeah, he was playing 70.
No,
games.
Cam Talbot, I think, right? When he was on the Oilers, okay. They were like, yeah, we need you to play like 70 games. And it was like, oh, yeah. Well, that. Like, you know, obviously he stayed in the league for a few more years, but was never the same after that. Hmm. John Gibson's career high in games played, 60.
Yeah.
So.
And that was back when he was good. He's been playing, you know, he played 35 games last year in the shortened season.
Yep.
So, you know, in theory, yeah, it shouldn't be that. But he has been a negative value goalie for 3 years.
Yep. Absolutely.
130 games. I don't want any part of that for the huge commitment that he still has left on his deal.
But so, if you're the Ducks, you're like, hey, remember when this guy was so good?
Mm-hmm.
You know? Okay.
Yeah. We'll and can you find a GM who's like, well, I'm on the hot seat. I trade for John Gibson. He either goes back to the old John Gibson and I'm a genius, or he doesn't, and I'm getting fired anyways, and I don't care about the contract because
right. It's
somebody else's mm-hmm. problem. The other guy's Ilya Samsonov. The Capitals are looking for a new goalie, so I don't see why anyone wants.
They're probably looking for two new goalies.
Unless it's to go back. Yeah, yeah. Mackenzie Blackwood is one of those, like, this is how quickly things can change, because a year ago he was in the mix for Canadian Olympic team, and now he seems like he's a bum. Varlamov is interesting. I do think we all kind of looked at that and said that, you know, the Islanders would move on at some point in that contract. He's not. The contract isn't awful right now because it's only a year left. But, you know, again, does somebody want to put him in goal as a starter? Probably not. And James Reimer, hey, he's a solid B goalie, which is not a bad thing to be in the league. And
yeah, for sure.
Probably be that wherever he goes.
Yeah. Reimer, like a skosh above average in goals saved above expected last year. Same is true of Varlamov, honestly. But as you say, mm-hmm. 48 games for Reimer, 31 for Varlamov. Like, don't count on these guys to be your starters, basically. It'll be really interesting, especially because the Sharks have three goalies. They have Reimer, they have Hill, and don't forget they traded for Kaapo Kakkonen at the deadline.
But do they, though? Yeah. They have three guys listed as gold.
Well, they have three guys on the books for next year. Let's put it that way. And so I think Kakkonen is interesting. I think he could be a good-ish goalie, honestly. Like, maybe not for the San Jose Sharks, but like I think he's a bit of a player. And Aiden Hill, not so much. But if you're going to trade one of them, you trade the older guy who's good, and you keep the younger guy mm-hmm. who's good. Makes perfect sense. Because no one wants Aiden Hill, basically. Although if the Capitals call, boy, do I have a goalie for you. His name's Aiden Hill.
Mm-hmm.
That's most of the big names on the list. I guess it's interesting that the Flyers are maybe thinking about trading Van Riemsdyk. Again, who's taking that contract? I don't know, but somebody might. We'll see. It'll be, like I say, it'll be a very interesting week. Everybody's
And then there's always some guys that you're not even expecting that, that get moved, which is the fun part too. And it'll all happen
the second we finish recording.
2 hours, 2 hours before you even downloaded this.
Also, while we were talking about that, Mikhail Sergachev announced he has changed agents and his current deal expires next summer. He is like, and this is Chris Johnson speaking, he's likely to sign an extension with TBL in the coming weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be interesting too, because...
Yep, never a great sign when somebody switches agents, but...
Nope. We'll see. But if they're saying he's going to sign an extension in the next week or two, boy, that's crazy. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Thanks for subscribing to the podcast and the Patreon and all that kind of stuff. Again, apologies for not doing like a regular Wednesday episode, but you know, circumstances, it's not up to us. Look, do I want the draft to be on Thursday? No, I don't. Give me the Friday, Saturday combo. That's the sweet spot for me, but hey, I can't complain too much.
Exactly.
I guess it doesn't really matter. Sean, plugs.
You can find me on The Athletic. I will be, I'm heading to Montreal tomorrow. I will be doing live draft blogs for both Thursday night and Friday from the Bell Center.
So Friday will be a fun one.
Doing that.
Yeah, in the sixth round, the New York Rangers
have lots of takes.
This guy from the USHL that I've never heard of.
You have, well, I mean, that's also going to be mid first.
Sure.
But yeah, it should be a fun week, and I've got some draft related stuff coming later in the week. And, Ian Mendez and I will be doing our, show, in person. I was going to say live, not live, but in person.
Live to tape.
So we may have some people, jump in and join us. Who knows?
Connor McDavid.
Look at fun that. Week. Listen on Thursday morning and see if you can tell, compare it to this morning's podcast and see if you can tell how hungover I am on Thursday.
I got to say, you sound pretty hungover today, so it's going to be a tough one to beat.
This is my baseline, so use this as the test group, and yeah.
Oh, boy, oh, boy. My plugs, as I mentioned, I wrote What We Learned Yesterday. It published mere minutes ago as we're recording this, and it's about the stuff we talked about with the Sharks. I don't understand what the hell they're doing. It's crazy. Anyway, I will also be doing, like, draft coverage. Obviously, I'm going to leave the, like, draft stuff to the experts at Elite Prospects who have heard of every single player in the USHL and beyond. They have some takes on the NAHL 3 that you're going to love to hear. But I will be doing all the trade reactions and stuff like that throughout the next few days. And then let's see, what else? Oh, the draft guide, of course. Now is your chance. You want to learn all about all those guys we were just talking about that you've never heard of. You will have heard of them if you download the Elite Prospects draft guide. It's comprehensive, folks. I don't know how else to put it. And if you want to sign up for that, the code ILOVEEP on an annual subscription will get you, our loyal listeners, an extra 3 months tacked onto the end. So it's 15 months for the price of 12. Can't beat that. And then, yeah, the Puck Soup Patreon, patreon.com/PuckSoup. We did a bonus episode last week where we unretired one number for every single team in the league, except Seattle and Vegas, because they don't have any players' numbers retired, and we retired a different number instead. So, check that out, and then we're going to record the mailbag in like 2 minutes here, so check that out as well. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the draft. Enjoy the trades. And we'll be back next week to talk about all the bad decisions everybody made. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to what if you commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.